Devotional service to the Lord is more effective and practical than the system of Spirit controlling the senses. In the service of Lord Kunda, the senses are transcendentally engaged. Thus, there is no chance of their being engaged in sense satisfaction. The senses want some engagement. To check them artificially is no check at all, because as soon as there is some opportunity for enjoyment, the servant by senses will certainly take advantage of it. There are many such instances in history, just like Vishwamrita Muni's falling a victim to the beauty of Manaka. But the poor Haridas was allured at midnight by the well-dressed Maya, and still she could not induce the great devotee into her trap. The whole idea is that without devotional service to the Lord, neither the yogi system nor dry philosophical speculation can ever become successful. Pure devotional service to the Lord without being tinged with fruitive work, mystic yoga, or speculative philosophy is the foremost procedure to attain self-realization. Such pure devotional service is transcendental in nature, and the systems of yoga and jnana are subordinate to such a process. When the transcendental devotional service is mixed with the subordinate process, it is no longer transcendental, but is called mixed devotional service. Srila Vyasa, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam, will gradually develop all these different systems of transcendental realization in the text. So, this is literally the last verse, practically in this section, where Narada Muni is giving instruction to Srila Vyasadeva. So, of course, this instruction began when? What was the setting of the scene when this instruction began?
Very much
agree.
Why
are
you not satisfied after
writing Vedas? Yes, so you know, here, of course, the key word is satisfaction. That is saying that bhakti gives satisfaction, and of course, this is the ultimate or the last statement that Narada Muni is making in this line of thought. That ultimately Srila Vyasadeva was dissatisfied. And therefore, Narada Muni is encouraging Srila Vyasadeva to write the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam, as Srila Prabhupada states in his last sentence. He says, Srila Vyasadeva, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam, will gradually develop all these different systems of transcendental realization. So there are many stages of transcendental realization, ultimately leading to bhakti and ultimately leading to kevala bhakti or pure devotional service. And Srimad Bhagavatam ultimately is encouraging the hearer or the reader to take up pure devotional service. Because as described in this verse here, it is only devotional service which gives satisfaction. So along the path of transcendental realization, there are many different stages on that path, and ultimately the statement here is to the degree that there is bhakti, to that degree you'll be satisfied. So, therefore, if one takes up bhakti in its purest, unmotivated, uninterrupted degree, one will get complete satisfaction. In the fifth chapter, in verse 8, Narada Muni gave Srila Vyasadeva himself as the best example. That you have compiled all the Vedic literatures up to the point of writing the Vedanta Sutra, which is the conclusion of all the different processes of transcendental realization, and that Shodhyasadeva was also well accomplished in what he had written about. So he was also a great, exponent of the different processes, and yet Narada Muni pointed out that he was still dissatisfied. So the Shiva Vyasadeva, who was at the top of the list of practitioners and those who have realization of these different processes, if he's dissatisfied, how can anyone else ever claim to be satisfied? So therefore he asked him, you don't divert, be careful in your writing that you're not diverting people's minds to other processes, because ultimately if you divert them away from bhakti to the degree that they go away from bhakti, to that degree they'll be dissatisfied. They're right job, therefore write the Srimad Bhagavatam and teach them to take up pure devotional service. But of course, in order to understand pure devotional service, Srila Vyasadeva does have to describe the different stages of transcendental realization in order for people to understand. So we go through all the different cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And coming then gradually, when we get to hear about the Kevala Bhakta, the pure devotee, devotional service of Braja Bhaktis, Bhaktis, we can understand something to some degree. Similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, one may question if Krishna's teaching bhakti, because actually the only subject matter of the Bhagavad Gita is also bhakti. But most people who read the Bhagavad Gita, they may take on, oh, it's discussing Jnana Yoga, and others, instruction on Kama Yoga. Some take the Kriya Yoga, Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote the autobiography of the yogi. His understanding of Bhagavad Gita is confirming Kriya Yoga, which is as described here, a mystic yogic process of meditation upon universal form. But actually, the Bhagavad Gita is on every page is actually disqualifying bhakti. But in order to understand bhakti, you have to understand the progressive stages of realization and the state of consciousness, which increase to the point of bhakti. And Srimad Bhagavatam takes off from that point where ultimately, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, surrender unto me, the person who does surrender unto Krishna literally takes the first step in bhakti, that yes, okay, I will put my faith that I will serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by that everything will be accomplished. There's no need for karma, jnana, yoga like that. I'll just surrender to Krishna. So from that very beginning of bhakti, the Srimad Bhagavatam then takes us through all the different levels of bhakti, from Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Nishta, Ruchi, Shakti, Rati, Bhava, and then Prana, like this. So, it was described in the very beginning, just so that the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the very beginning, I think in the second chapter, there's that verse that only unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service will give complete satisfaction to the self. So that was spoken by Sudha Goswami. So from the very beginning, they're describing this is what is being taught, and all other different cheating processes or gradually being swept away in order to come to this pure. So here, it describes in this verse that Pure devotion in the service of the Lord without being tinged with food, work, mystic yoga, or speculative philosophy is the foremost procedure to attain self-realization. Such pure devotion in service is transcendental in nature, and the systems of yoga and jnana are subordinate to such a process. When the transcendental devotional service is mixed with the subordinate process, it is no longer transcendental, but is called mixed devotional service. In that little paragraph there, Srila Prabhupada sums up the essence of understanding all the different processes of jnana, of karma, jnana, yoga, and all the different degrees that they may be mixed with devotional service and pure devotional service itself. In that one little paragraph, he's summed up everything very, very nicely. But if we break it down a little bit and have a look at it, it's actually in the fifth chapter, this book, so the previous chapter. Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the core, gives a very detailed scientific analysis to help us to understand, you know, a little bit more about what Srila Prabhupada is summarizing here. So he describes that there is karma yoga, which is predominantly karma yoga. There's three different types of bhakti. Let's start from there. Three different types of bhakti. Because here there's a statement that when transcendental devotional service is mixed with the subordinate process, it's no longer transcendental, but it's called mixed devotional service. So one has to be very, very careful, of course, not to start looking at devotees that are, you know, you're not performing transcendental devotional service. There's a little mixture, so we might look at a devotee and think, oh, you know, you've got a little mixture of something else in there, so you know, you're actually, you know, not performing transcendental devotional service, you're doing something mundane. But there's, you know, that's not quite correct. Actually, even from the neophyte stage, even from the very beginning, the devotees who follow the path set out by Srila Prabhupada, they're following the path of pure devotional service. They're following the path of Sula Bhakti, pure devotional service, from the very, very beginning. Okay. So, and therefore, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the green mango and the ripe mango. It may be a little green, a bit immature, but nonetheless, it's still a mango. It's not some other fruit. And actually, you know, green mangoes, you can make a really nice chutney. That's one of my favourites, the green mango chutney. So, you know, therefore, it's a little sour, but it's still very, very delicious. And therefore, you see sometimes even the very, very young devotees, like myself, hopefully, you know, if we can follow the path of, you know, pure devotional service, even from the very, very beginning, hopefully that is pleasing to the Vaishnavas and to Krishna, because it's still a mango, nonetheless, although it's a little bit sour, still, you know, tasty. Because it's pure devotional service in the beginning stages. It's not, we're not practicing, we don't practice as a kami, as a jnani, or as a yogi in this movement. So there are three different types of bhakti. Two are considered actually bhakti, and the third one is analyzed to be understood to be not bhakti, although it appears to be the same. And that is what's called guna bhakti, guna bhuta bhakti, which means that one may be practicing either karma yoga, jnana yoga, or a Sangha yoga, and the practitioner, so they're known as karmis, jnanis, and yogis, even though they may offer worship to the Lord.
But because there is a tinge of bhakti, if there's no tinge of bhakti, they cannot get any result. The kamis, jnanis, and yogis, if there's not a tinge of bhakti, their activities are useless. That's what is described here as the systems of yoga and jnana are subordinate to bhakti. That means they're subordinate. Without being attached to bhakti to some degree, that will not produce a result. But if the main part, for instance, the kami, if they're performing some activity and they may, you know, offer something similar to what a devotee does, perform some activity in relationship to the Lord. But if the prime goal of their activity, the predominant nature of their activity is to get the result and enjoy that fully themselves, then in essence that is not bhakti. Whereas another kami whose predominant mood is bhakti, their predominant mood is actually to please the Supreme Lord, they may be following the exact same activities of karma yoga, but that is considered bhakti, because there's a predominance of bhakti, even though they, you know, to some degree they're enjoying the fruits of karma. And so the same for the karmas, jnanis, and yogis. Those karmis with the tiniest little tinge of bhakti, not enough for it to be called bhakti. In other words, when there's just the minutest degree of bhakti, they're getting the results of their activities, but bhakti can't manifest its actual nature. You know, that love for God doesn't really manifest enough for there to be, to say that there's bhakti there. They can elevate and become jnanis with also a tiny little tinge, and those jnanis can elevate and they can become, they can actually attain liberation due to that little tinge, impersonal liberation. Now those persons, even the karmis with little tinge of bhakti, if they associate with the devotee, then by hearing and chanting, that was also described in the previous verse, I think verse 36, that you know, if they're performing their activities in karma yoga, but they're associating with devotees, hearing, chanting, glorifying the Lord, then they come to a platform where there's a predominance of bhakti. So that's their platform is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Where in the Bhagavad Gita do we hear of those? They're performing karma yoga, which means they want some material result to some degree, but mostly they're engaged in bhakti. You know, that is 7:16. That, you know, that some, you know, devotees approach Krishna because they want, you know, freedom from the reactions of suffering. You know, they want material benefits, or they want to come to the platform of proper understanding of things as they are. Krishna says they're all very dear to me. Why? Because there's a predominance of bhakti. You know, they're devotees. Krishna, you know, includes them. They are devotees. Mostly, you know, they tend to be grihastha devotees in the neophyte stage. But they're very, very dear to Krishna. And the so they're like sakama devotees. Devotees who want some, they may have some desire for you know, material enjoyment, but still they're devotees. And the nishkama devotees,
tend to be sometimes the brahmacharis, the vanaprastha sannyas, the fourth category, as mentioned there in that verse, actually searching after, they're not really after, some material benefits or the acquisition of knowledge. They really want to, develop a relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth. So, now, Krishna is so pleased with those devotees that even those devotees who are, may have some desire for material benefits, but predominantly they're trying to actually please the Supreme Lord. The first installment is the Jeta Dharma Marjanam, whatever you know, the distress, the miseries from their life are removed. Those who want material benefits, they can get those material benefits. And gradually devotees also become very well versed in Shastra, so their inquisitiveness is somewhat satisfied at this. And because of the, as they develop in their devotional service, and it becomes somewhat pure and purer, still, if they achieve liberation due to nicely associating devotees, nicely serving Krishna, they actually attain Salokya Mukti. They attain liberation of, they can go back to Vaikuntha and live on the same planet as the Supreme Lord. But generally, their liberation is, in the mood of relationship with the Supreme Lord, attracted to his opulence and position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the Nishkama devotees, those who are actually searching after knowledge of the Absolute Truth, they can elevate to the platform of actually, if the Sakama devotees don't, they can also progress to the platform of Nishkama devotees, and they get the same results as we're listening here as well. And that is that they can attain Santaras, or similar to the four Kumaras, where again there is a mood of bhava or ecstatic transcendental bliss, which is derived from their devotional service to the Supreme Lord, and they're generally attracted to the Lord, maybe in his feature as Vishnu or Narayan. And they can also, if they associate with devotees, according to their association with devotees, they can also attain higher levels, such as Dasya. But generally, they attracted also to the worship of the Lord in awe and reverence. So then that's called Pradhana Bhakti Bhakti, where there's actually a predominance of devotion. So even though there may be some, kama, or yoga, which is tinged with the bhakti, they're not called kamis, kyanis, or yogis, they're actually called bhaktis. There may be Sikkhana bhaktas, maybe Nishkhana bhaktas, or Rashi bhaktas. But then that is the first category which is actually accepted as bhakti. And the second category, which is Kaivala bhakti. Kaivala bhakti means pure devotional service without any tinge of karma, jnana, or yoga. Those devotees, they attain prema bhakti, that is ultimately the goal that they achieve is prema bhakti, and they tend to be, by that prema bhakti, they tend sweetness of the features of the Lord, such as his appearances as Krishna and Ram, more so than his features as Narayan or Vishnu, and they develop, you know, dasya, satya, vatsalya, mandhurya, ras, in prema bhakti with the Supreme Lord. They realize that very, very sweet feature of the Lord. So, ultimately, you know, we see that Srila Narada Muni in the previous chapter, in the 12th verse, he condemned karma, jnana, and yoga, which has no relationship with bhakti. He has, Narada Muni has described what pure devotional service is, and he's given hints of mixed devotional service, but ultimately he has recommended that you know, Vyasadeva followed my example, because as I was instructed by those bhakti vedantas, they taught me pure devotional service, and I followed that path. And that's how Narada Muni came to the platform that he is on, and he is recommending to Vyasadeva, you also teach that path, just as I was instructed, of pure devotional service for Kevala Bhakti, because that is the most satisfying to the self. And that's what's being described here as the final statement in Narada Muni. So, you know, on a practical level, for us as devotees, after all that sort of technical knowledge, we go back here to this part in Srila Prabhupada's purport, where he says that, you know, to check the senses artificially is no check at all. So, you know, one actually has to, Srila Prabhupada describes that there are two ways to check the senses. One is by force, where you have some, you know, material desire, and, you know, by some, you know, rules and regulations, by, you know, jnana, by knowledge, you know, by yoga practice, or, you know, trying to control the senses by any of these, you sort of force that desire somewhere, you know, deep into the heart, you know, and you just push it down, you sort of keep it there. But the problem is that it just sits there, and as soon as there is some opportunity, it just comes, you know, pouncing out and just grabs you by the neck. So we set then the example here is given of Vishvamrita and Manaka. Now, you know, Vishvamrita was a very, very powerful sage, very powerful yogi. I believe he wanted to be a Brahmana, and therefore he performed austerities in the forest for thousands of years, and Indra became fearful that, you know, he may end up with my post, so he sent an apsara, Manaka, to come, you know, divert him from yoga practice. So, you know, he's sitting with his eyes are shut, you know, he's closed all the senses of his body, like this by force, this is the process by force, you know, I'll not look, you know, I want to look, but I'll not look, you know, that's it. So anyway, when she came and she saw his eyes, you know, shut like that, you know, she tinkled the bangles on her arms, and he said, oh, there must be a beautiful woman standing there. And she sort of dipped into the water, and, you know, all her clothes were sort of wet on her body and what have you. And he looked at that. And when he looked, he was so enchanted by her beauty that he decided, you know, yes, you'll stay with me, we will enjoy it here. And you just, you know, become completely devoted. For 100 years, for
100 years he enjoyed with Kanaka. Shakuntala, she was born. And after some time, Shakuntala is very famous. After some time, he thought, I'm supposed to be doing yoga. having all sense of education with an avatar, as he remembered, this is not what I was supposed to be doing. So again, he took to the yoga process, and again, he could have sent someone else. And this time, he became really angry. I'm not going to look. And as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, that even one of the senses, on which the mind focuses, carry away a man's intelligence. Like this, he wasn't going to let any of his senses be attracted. And he became angry and he cursed it. You stay here as a stone for 1,000 years for coming and disturbing, like that. And then he realized all the piety from his yoga had again been exhausted by cursing. So again he was diverted. So again he had to perform his yoga, for 1,000 years, and finally, Lord Brahma came and gave him the benediction. Yes, you are a Brahmana equal with your sister. This was the ultimate goal. And that is. So, Srila Prabhupada, one of the things that he pulls from that story, of course, is that failure is a pillar of success. So, Srila Prabhupada, he quotes that story. Ultimately, he achieved his goal, but there was some failure. But that became the pillar of his success. It gave him some, determination. Srila Prabhupada was always very much in that mood with his disciples and anyone who took the attempt of devotional service, because that's in the mood, again, when Narada Muni is discussing in the previous chapter, I think it's verse 17, the benefits of pure devotional service, that even if one falls, still the taste of devotional service is so nectarian, one cannot forget it, and that there's no loss for such a person. A person who falls to devotional service, there's no loss if they practice pure devotional service even for some time. When they get the determination to begin from where they left off, they begin. And they use that failure as, a platform to, it helps them. It's in their mind and their heart. Whereas the other example here is that Haridas Thakur, now he was absorbed in pure devotional service, and therefore even Mayadevi herself, what to speak of, an avatar, and she approached Haridas Thakur, but he wasn't, he could not be induced, because the point is that the degree of bhakti that is being practiced is so satisfying, and this is the second process. Prabhupada is giving Haridas Thakur as an example of the second process. The second process is you just enjoy what you're doing so much that you couldn't dream of stopping it or doing anything else inferior. That's the path that we try to practice and teach. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says that you, somehow or another, if you're trying to attract people to Krishna consciousness, don't worry about all the rules and regulations. Somehow or another, get them attached to something in this movement. Anything. If they become attached to something, all the rules and regulations will come because of their attachment and to the degree they're attached. Not that people come, I've seen sometimes younger devotees in their preaching, they try to be very proud of their position of, we follow four regular principles, chant 16 rounds a day, what do you do? Is that hold dogs, camel, and asses? Our mood is that, I remember when I first joined
I said to him, my son, this is the first night, and you know, just literally picking up off the street, because one of my first questions is, do you guys have cold showers? You know? I mean, I used to do all sorts of, you know, slightly yogi things as a devotee, but, you know, cold showers, I just ask him just in case. He said, nah. It just, you know, you just become attached, Ganga, and, you know, that's his mood, you know. And he's thinking, you know, if he gets attached, you know, maybe he'll be able to have the cold shower. Within a week, I'm on the next day I left from the mosque on his bus. Within a week, we're out in the middle of the Nullarbor, travelling across, you know, and of course, at, you know, 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning, you've got to get up. You're standing in the desert, your copens, you've got a cold, freezing cup of water, and you've got to have that, you know, bath before you go to Mongolia. You know, and the desert, the Nullarbor desert, at night, is just like Alaska. It's absolutely freezing. But by that stage, you know, I was attached. I was attached through the devotees. Prasadam, you know, the halava, kirtans. So it's like, what could I do? You know, I was, oh, I have the cold shower, but don't take away my halava. So enough on it. That is, you know, that is the process that Prabhupada, you know, gives that. And of course, you know, this Rathiyatra festival is like that. But, you know, many people will come and they'll just become, you know, attached to some aspect of Krishna consciousness, the colourfulness, you know, the dancing devotees, you know, the plays, the singing, you know, anything like that. And, you know, through that attachment, it is so powerful that gradually it overrides everything. And this is the benefit of association with devotees. Actually, as we described here, the whole process is that as you associate with devotees and you see they have this, you know, more pure, intense mood of bhakti, and you see, you know, the satisfaction they're deriving, you know, that, you know, you want to get a taste of that. By associating with them, you can see it, you know, that they're performing such nice devotional service, unmotivated, uninterrupted. They're so satisfied, you know. Here, actually, you know, this cave of bhakti, of course, produces the greatest satisfaction because Krishna is so attracted to this pure devotional service that there's not a tinge of any other motivation. That he gives himself in his most sweetest, you know, complete form as Krishna. Again, in Vishnu Chakravarti, the core, he tries to describe so we can understand the difference between having knowledge about the Lord or, you know, having this prema or pure love. To give an example, he says that the mother with great attachment to her son, that she derives immense pleasure from her son, even though her son may be full of fault and without good qualities. Son or daughter. Whereas, you know, the same mother, she may see the beautiful moon in the sky, which relieves all suffering. Much transcendental nectar, but she sees more pleasure in her son than she does in the moon. So he describes that this prema bhakti, it actually binds Krishna because it gives Krishna so much joy. So then he tries to explain that. How is Krishna derived so much joy from being bound?
describes bondage. Generally, when we think of bondage, we think of the bondage of ignorance, which causes immense suffering. An example of that is, you know, a prisoner. A prisoner is bound with chains and ropes, and it produces so much suffering. But you can also bind a very respectable person, and you bind him by, you offer nice, or her, you offer nice clothes, and you know, nice eatables, and you treat them very nicely. You know, and when someone does that to you, you know, then you become bound. You know, by them, but it is very enjoyable bondage. That bondage of you know, love and affection. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it. You know, therefore, try and imagine the bondage of having the mother for a son when that son is Krishna. It's, all encompassing, and Krishna actually enjoys that bondage. And he describes that the residents of Vraja, their love for Krishna is so intense, their attachment is so strong, that it completely covers his aspect of being the Supreme Lord. It covers his Aishwarya aspect of, you know, opulence and power, and therefore their love is described as superior, or they actually derive a greater happiness. The devotees themselves actually, such as Mother Yasoda, derive a great happiness but because they get to experience the Supreme Lord in his most sweetest feature. Those devotees who also appreciate Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they also derive unlimited transcendental bliss. But it's comparatively, it is understood that the transcendental bliss of Mother Yasoda, you know, and the gopis in that mood where there's no, you know, nothing crippling that bhakti. Because actually, to some degree, our love for the Lord can be a little bit reduced or crippled, the intimacy, because we understand He is God, or we're approaching Him as God. Whereas when that is removed, you can actually approach Him more intimately. And when you approach God closer and more intimately, He loves that. And the devotees also love that intimacy. So it's very, very, very sweet. So, therefore, again, bringing things down to a very practical level, for our point of view, the devotees, if we want to be always fully satisfied as devotees, we should actually be aspiring to, you know, perform devotional service in a mood that is becoming more unmotivated and less interrupted. And to the degree that we do that, to that degree we'll be very satisfied. Because to that degree, Krishna becomes bound and he experiences great joy. Krishna actually becomes very attached to that devotee. The more one's bhakti becomes, you know, a more purified level, Krishna becomes attached. And when a devotee understands that, you know, Krishna is somehow attached to my devotional service, you know, I'm the most unqualified, you know, fallen person, and somehow or another the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoyed the service I did to Him. That satisfaction is very, very powerful. It overrides all the attractions of material world. And very, very powerful. And, you know, each and every devotee, to the degree that they try to develop that, Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. You know, if we want to perform devotional service just to enjoy the facility of ISKCON, big, big office, big, big facility, big, big name, like that, Krishna may give that, but you won't, you know, Krishna will offer that, but he won't offer himself. You know, but if you're just attached to associating yourself with Krishna, Krishna will offer that. And if that happens, that satisfaction is extremely powerful. And Krishna shows that on every level. Just, you know, to give a personal example, not that Krishna is attached to me, but sometimes even a rascal like me gets a little glimpse, a glimmer of hope. Just to give you a funny story, that there one time I was in India, and it was a big festival. And usually what happens, because when I visit the Indies, I usually just usually go on a tie, because I don't feel I'm qualified to, I mean, I'm not qualified to just go on a tie, but I know that they're particularly merciful, because I'm particularly offensive, I'm scared to touch Krishna too much, so I let other devotees do that. But when I do the puja, I like to do the puja for Shri Radha Pallava, because I'm standing there from a distance, I hope they don't mind too much. So, on this festival, the Sri Pujaras were picked and I, you know, chose the old worship of Krishna. And so this young devotee, young Brahma, he'd been around for a little bit, probably about 20 years junior, and he said, you always get to worship Radha Krishna, you know. You let me worship Radha Krishna. And I thought, you probably should be, you know, sort of trying to push it the other way, you're senior. But then I thought, well, I shouldn't be proud of thinking I'm so senior. And so I thought, and I said to him, you know, I said, look, you know, factually, you know, you're a very nice devotee. Taking, but he was Indian, and you're taking birth of a very, you know, elevated family, you know, very, very pious family. I took birth of a very, very sinful family. I shouldn't even be here. You know, I thought that I shouldn't even be in the room at all. So, you know, how can I try and pull rank? I shouldn't even be here. So, I moved across to Shushi for all the time, and he was going to also go to prison. So then, so there's the three pajamas. So then at the last minute, just before about to start, Bhaktisiddhanta Swami comes in. He says, I want to worship Radha Krishna. And that devotee had to leave the room. So, you know, it's, you can see that sometimes, even though we're completely unqualified, Krishna can make arrangements, and I felt actually Krishna made that arrangement, because had I stayed to worship Radha Krishna and been a little bit proud, Krishna would have removed me from the room, but instead he's made arrangements that I could stay here, so he's going to enjoy my service, a little attachment there, so I felt very wonderful, you know. And, the different examples like that, where Krishna makes these funny little arrangements, and you think, yes, you know, Krishna made a little arrangement for me that I could serve him. Another example, which was interesting, was that a few weeks ago I had this dream, and in the dream, Shushi Gaur and Tai, I saw them, I was going to some festival, and I saw them standing, you know, like they were in a bathing costume, and there was an abhishek about to happen. And I thought, oh no, I was taking them to the abhishek. So I picked them up and I started to take them and took them into the abhishek. And as I was walking in, I think it was Nityananda, he put his arm around my neck and he sort of rested his head on me and he was sort of, you know, just saying these really sweet things. I couldn't understand what he was saying, but he was being very affectionate. And I woke up and I thought, gee, that was a really nice dream. So anyway, a couple of days later, the devotee, devotee said to me, I'm having an abhishek, you know, there'll be many devotees coming, and maybe David Reed's one will come. And he said, what days are we arranged? And I said, well, the only day I can do it is on the 26th, because on every other day I've got, you know, my days is for the service. He said, oh, no, we can't do that. So he said, but we can get someone else. And I said, yes, yes, you can. He said, you can help them, do it. And I said, yes, yes, yes. That, I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to, I'd really like to do that. And anyway, I thought to myself, you know, because I thought, it seems like, you know, in one sense, that
Shishi Gaunata has told me that basically I'm going. And so I thought, so, well, most of my people happen on the 26th. And it so happened that, you know, that of course they had arranged David Reed's Swami's schedule, and, you know, he wasn't going to be there at that stage, and his schedule swapped and changed and swapped and changed, and then it turned out it was a very good day to run that day. And by the grace of Shishi Gaunata, I went along and performed that abhishek, which I'm very, very attached to. But, you know, the interesting thing was the Lord's reciprocation, you know, just a little bit. In essence, I felt, you know, maybe it's just that, you know, he's been extremely merciful to someone who doesn't deserve it, saying, look, you know, I can be attached to your service too. As much as you attach yourself to me, I'll attach myself to you. And this. So, you know, in this way, if we, you know, try and do our devotional service, even, you know, a rascal like me can get some, you know, reciprocation with the Supreme Lord. So, you know, certainly if I can do it, all the, you know, very qualified persons here can do it. Personally, I've always felt that, you know, still to this day, I don't feel that I actually belong here, because, you know, I'm literally remarked when they picked me up on the street, and, you know, just by the mercy of the devotees, they said, look, you know, this guy's a complete rascal, because, it's, you know, the devotees have been ordered by the spiritual masters to preach and what have you, so all these years they've tolerated me to some degree. So I'm still here. So I thank the devotees and I thank the Supreme Lord. But if such a rascal like me can do it, then, and this is the instruction of Radha Muni, you just increase the degree of your bhakti, and every single person in this world can actually go back to the spiritual world and be given the opportunity to engage in the most intimate relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the message. Do you have any quick questions or comments? Uninterrupted devotional service is misunderstood for something different. You know, uninterrupted means that we're always thinking of Krishna. That's basic. Uninterrupted, we're always thinking of Krishna, and we're thinking of Krishna in the mood that we want to show our love for him. Yeah? And devotees can do that. Some devotees, you know, Mahatma's a good example. Mahatma doesn't give classes, but every day he comes and hears classes. How long have we been in? So many years. I won't embarrass him for so many years. But, you know, he knows that that is very pleasing to Prabhupada and to the Vaishnavas. And, you know, he just sit there and he'll, you know, set such a good example that, you know, you go and hear from the devotees. Just as a regular principle. You know, not trying to, you know, make a big name for himself. You know, just sitting there quietly, always tries to ask a couple of good questions. And that, you know. So, you know, it's a good example. Srila Prabhupada used to give the example also of the lady in Vrindavan, you know, when he was at the Damodar temple, that, you know, she would just bring a bucket of water
You know, she will go back to, you know, the spiritual. She will go back to Goloka Vrindavan. But, you know, it appears, well, she's not a, you know, big devotee. She's not leading big services. She's just taking a bucket of water, you know, like that. If she was such a big devotee, why doesn't Krishna, you know, give her international fame? And, you know, but she does have international fame because Prabhupada recognized her. You know, Prabhupada pointed out the pure devotional aspect of it. That it didn't matter what conditions were, whether she was ill, tired, whether it rained, you know, it was freezing, it was too hot, it was too dark, it was scary, whatever the condition, every single day, without fail, she just took that water. They will not enjoy that. So that's the pure devotional service. And so, you know, it's a good observation that pure devotional service, uninterrupted, unmotivated, means that within our hearts, we're always thinking of Krishna in a mood of, how can I please you? That's uninterrupted, unmotivated, and that I don't want anything back for that. I don't want to be known as a big devotee, you know, and therefore you know, doing this, that, and the other. Don't want any you know, big facility within ISKCON. You know, don't even want to go back to Godhead. You know, if the Lord, you know, if you want me to stay here, because they know that you know, the Supreme Lord, actually, they get that satisfaction. See, that's they're so satisfied. You can tell the satisfaction of the devotees, of course. You know, you can tell the purity. Not by their position, not by their ashram, not by their body, male or female, but you can tell actually the purity of their devotion by how steadfast they are day in, day out, year after year, through fame and infamy, through thick and thin, through all sorts of difficulties, through the good and bad. They don't deviate because they wouldn't give up their service to Krishna under any circumstances. You know? Even if it's the most difficult of all, so, and there's no, you know, facility or recognition there. You know? So Srila Prabhupada was, you know, also a perfect example because, you know, Srila Prabhupada, basically most of his life, he had no recognition from the entire Vaishnava community, and those that did acknowledge him, you know, actually considered him in some derogatory way, you know, he's just a grihastha, he's pretty much attached to his family and his business like that. They never really saw him as anything much more than that, although they saw him as scholarly and this, that, and the other. But actually, practically his entire life as a devotee is working without the slightest recognition, not from family, not from devotees, not from the public. But he wouldn't give up that, you know, thinking of Krishna, you know, for anything. Nor he obviously didn't want anything back. Otherwise he would have given up years ago. When he took sannyas, he was, just after that, he was even gouged by a bull, a bull. And Prabhupada thought to himself, you know, that Krishna's taken everything from me. And now, you know, I must still be doing something wrong, you know, that Krishna has, you know, but Krishna is showing us, of course, that, you know, Prabhupada's not doing anything wrong, he's doing the right thing, that even, you know, you've already lost everything, now you're attacked by a bull, and all you're trying to do is serve Krishna, and he still never deviates, and there's not even scope for recognition like that. So, you know, these are the qualities of pure devotional service, but ultimately, you know, the devotee's satisfaction in that wonderful group, because when a devotee becomes attached to Krishna with love, Krishna attaches himself. You know, there may be so many devotees, I want you to do this. You know, I want Prabhupada to come to the West, and you know, no one else. And maybe something. You know, he said to Arjuna, I want you to hear. You're some of his followers, and the dancers, and what have you. You're a grihastha, you're a family man, like this, but I want you to hear this greatest of all philosophies. Why? Because you're my friend. You're my devotee, you're my friend. And, you know, when you get that feeling that Krishna is, you know, attached, Krishna likes the way I do devotional service, I'm trying very, very hard to do it properly, in the proper mood, and Krishna shows me, yes, I want you to do this service. You know, among so many qualified people, I like you, it's very, very, you know, satisfying like that. So, but yes, it is a point that we shouldn't mistake uninterrupted and unmotivated for rah, rah, rah.
Sometimes we become workaholics.
Yes, yes, similar point, yes.
And then while we're doing this, we're forgetting Krishna. We're thinking I'm Krishna, but I'm forgetting Krishna.
Yes.
So that actually is what causes fall down, because the heart, Mother said, becomes dry. Yeah. And then when you have dry heart, it's due to not being in touch with Krishna.
Yes, yeah, very, very good point. That, you know, and I think Master's often comments in the same way that, you know, for most devotees, pretty much the quantity is there. For most devotees at this time, they're doing the work with, you know, 10 people. But, you know, try for the quality, which is your point. You know, it's very important that we get that quality, because if we don't, that quantity, without quality, you can still fall away, you know. But even if you're not doing, it appears that you're not doing very much, but if the quality is there, you know, the satisfaction in your heart, because Krishna will reciprocate, is so powerful, it just overrides everything, all the attractions of the material world. You know, we you experience that even in a, you know, a mundane sense. You know, someone loves someone, they just forget everything else. Or, you know, because people get married, they fall in love. They're prepared to go through hell, you know, they're attached to each other. So much difficulty. You know, raising children, getting home with that. They're attached to each other. They don't even notice the problems. Everyone else is thinking, my goodness, you know, what's going on? So, but if that's there in the mundane way, we can work so hard. You know, Prabhupada used to quote the economic development, basis of economic development is family attachment. No family attachment, no economic development, no matter. But if mundane, you know, love, just a reflection, perverted reflection can induce that, how powerful is that pure love reciprocated between the pure soul and the Supreme Personality of God? It's so powerful like that. And that is the Radhamani's point here, his final conclusion.
yelling
attach yourself to the Supreme Lord in anger, lust, you know, like that, somehow or another, if you attach yourself to the Lord, then you know, you'll achieve the ultimate perfection. Thank you very much. Did you? Yeah, well, our Shuddhiyasa day, as described by Tathasandhava Jiva Goswami, is actually a vision tapa. Usually, Shuddhiyasa day is a jiva, is an